ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we're reading from 11th Canto, Chapter 13, the Hamsa Avatar Answers Questions, Texts 19 through 22. Unfortunately, as I have not been able to come to the temple as much as I'd like lately, and I don't know exactly when Mother Nanda came back, Mother Mukhya came back. I just wanted to say welcome back to Mother Mukhya. She probably said it already, because I don't know when she came, but I'd just like to say it also, Mother Mukhya. So text number 19. Word meaning Sahi, Lord Brahma, Ma, me, Achanchayat, remembered, Deva, the original demigod, Prashna, of the question, Para, the end, conclusion, the answer, Kitir Shaya, with a desire to obtain, understand, to attain, understand, Tasya, unto him, Aham, I, Hamsa Rupena, in my form of Hamsa, Sakasam, visible Agamam, became Tada at that time. Samam Achintaya Deva, Prashna Para Tatir Shaya, Prashaham Hamsa Rupena, Kasam Agamam Tada, Samam Achintaya Deva, Krishna Para Satir Shaya, Kasyaham Hamsarupena, Sukasam Agamatada, Samam Achintaya Deva, Krishna Para Tatir Shaya, Krishna Hum Hum Sarupena, Sapasam Agamam Tada,
Sakasham Agamam Tada, Samam Achintaya Deva,
So what I'll do is I'll just read the translations. There's a few short purports, and then text 22 has a longer purport, so we'll go there. So translation to text 19. Lord Brahma desired to attain the answer to the question that was puzzling him, and thus he fixed his mind on me, the Supreme Lord. At that time, in my form of Hamsa, I became visible to Lord Brahma. Report. Hamsa means swan, and the specific ability of the swan is to separate a mixture of milk and water, extracting the rich, milky portion. Similarly, Lord Krishna appeared as Hamsa, or the swan, in order to separate the pure consciousness of Lord Brahma from the modes of material nature. Text 20. Thus seeing me, the sages, placing Brahma at the lead, came forward and worshipped my lotus feet. Then they frankly asked me, "Who are you?" Report. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments, when Lord Brahma was unable to answer the question placed by the sages, he fixed his mind and thought of the Supreme Lord. The Lord then assumed the form of Hamsa and appeared before Lord Brahma and the sages, who proceeded to inquire about the specific identity of the Lord. Text 21. My dear Uddhava, the sages, being eager to understand the ultimate truth of the yoga system, thus inquired from me, "Now please hear as I explain that which I spoke unto the sages." My dear, text 22, my dear Brahmanas, if when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, since all souls are ultimately one without individuality, then how is it that your question, then how is your question possible or appropriate? Ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place of both of us, both yourselves and of me? Purport. Ashraya means the resting place or shelter. Lord Krishna's question, quote, "What is our actual resting place or shelter?" end quote, means, what is our ultimate nature or constitutional position? This is because no one can come to rest or be satisfied unless one is in one's natural position. The example is given that one may travel all over the world, but ultimately one becomes satisfied by returning to one's own home. Mother Mukya can tell us that. She's satisfied being in her own home here, New Ramanreti. Similarly, a crying child is satisfied when embraced by its own mother. By inquiring about the shelter or resting place of himself and the Brahmanas, the Lord is indicating the eternal constitutional position of every living entity. If Lord Krishna were also in the jiva category, and if all living entities, including him, were thus equal, there would be no deep purpose in one living entity inquiring and another answering. Only one who is in a superior position can meaningfully answer important questions. It may be argued that the bona fide spiritual master answers all questions of the disciple, yet the guru is in the jiva category. The answer is that the bona fide spiritual master speaks not on his own behalf, but as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is in the Vishnu category. A so-called guru speaking on his own behalf as a jiva soul is useless and unable to meaningfully answer serious questions. Thus the sages question, "Ko Bhavan," who are you, indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally an individual person. And because the sages, headed by Lord Brahma, offered obeisances and worshipped the Lord, it is understood that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma is the first created being in this universe. As the first created being in this universe could not accept any other living entity except the Lord as worshipable, Lord Krishna's actual purpose is to explain the ultimate perfection of yoga, which the sages were desiring to know. If one becomes fixed in transcendental knowledge, the mutual attraction between the material mind and the material sense objects automatically ceases. The spiritual mind is not attracted to material objects of gratification. And thus, by spiritualizing the mind, material existence automatically slackens. By questioning the propriety of the sages' questions, the Lord is assuming the position of the spiritual master and preparing to give valuable instructions. One should never be envious of a bona fide spiritual master, especially if, as in the case of Lord Hamsa speaking to the sages headed by Lord Brahma and Sanat Kumara, the guru is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Omagana Timanandasha Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshuhindu Tamyena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. Of late, I've been doing some study of the Brihadbhagavatamrita by Sanatan Goswami. And in that book, one of the most prominent features is a description of different levels. In the first part of the book, where Narada Muni is searching for the greatest devotee, we get a look at different levels of devotion, from a brahmana all the way to the gopis of Vrindavan. The description in the book takes us through different levels of devotion. Ultimately, Krishna tells Narada that everyone gets my mercy. So it's not that even those in the lower levels don't get the mercy, but there are levels. And that's an important lesson to learn from Brihadbhagavatamrita. It's repeated in the second part, which is the story of Gopakumar, when he's traveling back to Godhead. He goes to different levels of existence in the universe. Even in the spiritual sky, different levels are present there. He was dissatisfied in Vaikuntha. And then Narada Muni took him aside and told him there is a higher place, there's another level. So this idea of levels is something that is important in understanding and approaching spiritual life. And we get that same instruction in the verses and purports for today. Question is quite bluntly put. Who are you? And in the purport, the discussion is the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If there's no difference, if they're not on different levels, then how can there be questioning and answering and any effective and teachable manner? So this idea is essential to understanding spiritual life. And it's described in the Shastra, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovididati Kama, that yes, all living beings are the same in one sense. They're the same as living beings. But there's different levels. And this verse explains that the different levels are one eternal living being is maintaining all the others. In other words, it's the definition of God. What is God? What is God in relation to his creation? What is God in relation to other living entities? They may all be eternal, but there's a difference. One is actually the chief eternal, and he's maintaining all the others. That's what it means when we say God. He maintains all the others. And so, again, there's this idea of different levels. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada tells a very interesting story. It's about a simple village man who had one great qualification which ultimately enabled him to become the servant of the Supreme Personality of God. And that one characteristic he had was a burning desire to serve the greatest person. Maybe you've heard this story before. Simple village man, and in his daily life he noticed that the village chief was kind of like, you know, in charge. People respected him. They put him on a different level than the ordinary villager. And so this simple man wanted to serve the greatest. That was his desire. So he approached the village chief and he asked him, "I see that you're the greatest person, and you know, I would like to render some service to you." And so the village chief accepted the simple offering of this villager, and he gave him some service to do. But after a while, there was a visitor to the village, and the village chief, his servant, his simple villager, noticed that the village chief was going to this visitor to the village and, you know, offering homage to him and, you know, putting himself at the service of this person who was actually the district governor in the government. He was the village chief superior. So when the simple villager saw the village chief and submission and service to the governor, then he thought, well, maybe the village chief isn't the greatest person. I want to serve the greatest person, so let me serve the governor. Now, this man was obviously quite expert. He wasn't such a simple person after all, because he was able to get himself engaged in the service of the governor. And so he was serving the governor, and he was quite pleased in doing that, and he was happy in that service. And the governor was similarly satisfied with this man's service. But in his accompanying the governor in his rounds, they came one time to the king's palace, and this villager, a simple man, saw the governor offering respect to the king. So he thought, oh, gee, well, maybe the king is the greatest person. I want to serve the king. So somehow or another, he got himself engaged in the service of the king. And he was very happy doing that. He was very happy in that service. But then he noticed that sometimes the king would leave the palace and go out into the forest to the hermitage of some ascetic, some sage. And he would offer his obeisances there and offer to render him service, hear from him. And so our villager, he thought, well, the king is not the greatest person. This sage is the greatest person. So I want to serve this sage. So he went and he got to that sage and approached him. And I see that the king is coming and offering to you. I thought he was the greatest person. You must be the greatest person. What did he say? No, 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 no. I'm not the greatest person. This is very similar to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, by the way, because every time Gopakumar or Narada Muni thought that they were at glorifying a particular person as the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy or the greatest devotee, they would say, no, 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 I'm not even a devotee. Don't say that about me. But anyway, this sage dwelling in a hermitage in the forest, he also said, no, 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 I'm just the servant. I'm just a servant of Krishna. So this humble villager asked him, where can I find Krishna? I must serve the greatest person. If Krishna is the greatest person, I must find him. So the sage told him, go to the local Hare Krishna temple. And you will find Krishna. So he went to the temple. And the amazing part about this story is that he went to the temple and as we were talking, he was so expert to get himself engaged in service of these various people he considered the greatest. He was able to understand from the deity that the deity is the supreme person and that you should render your service here. And he got engaged in the service of the supreme personality of Godhead in that way. He understood. He had some realization. He had some interaction with the deity that, yes, now you've come to the service of the greatest person. So, Krishna is the greatest person. He's a different person than us. It's not equal. It's not all one. He's superior to us. He's superior to us. And the thing about this story that teaches us about these different levels that's so instructive that I find is that how you show your appreciation, your knowledge of, or you acknowledge that there are different levels is by rendering service. What meaning? I accept you as a superior person, and there's so much lip service that can go on. But if you're actually accepting that someone is greater than you, then what? How do you practically show that? You practically show that by rendering some service. Now that's right out of Bhagavad Gita. Tad vidhi pani parthena pani prasna seve upadakshanti te ganam ganinas tadvadarshana. That if you want to know the absolute truth, then you have to approach someone that's superior to you, that has knowledge. Because, again, as I said in the purport there, what's the use of questioning if there's just equals, you know? There has to be some ability of a superior there to show and instruct an inferior. Some of these words are a little abrasive, sometimes I think superior, inferior. But I think you understand what the point I'm trying to make. So if you want that, then you have to render service. You not only ask questions, prashna, they're asking questions here. The Brahmins are asking questions of Lord Brahma. He couldn't answer. So he went to his superior, who appeared in the form of Lord Hamsa, and spoke and answered the questions of the Brahmanas. So, not just questions, but service, sevaya, render some service and ask questions. That combination recognizes this idea of there being different levels and how we take advantage of it. So Krishna is not like us in that sense. He's the Supreme Lord, and we are his servants. So there's a clear distinction between the levels on which we dwell, we exist. He's the supreme, we're the servant. Now, that relationship is essential to solving the perplexities of life, because that's why we approach a superior person anyway. We approach a more wealthy person, I need some money. You know, we approach someone that knows because I need to know. We have some need. That's why we approach a superior person. That's why we approach God. We have some need. Arjuna. Think of Arjuna in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita and the first few verses of the second chapter, we find a person, Arjuna, who has a need. Now, he has a relationship with Krishna, but because that relationship was one of equals, friends, he still had his need. He had his perplexities about life and the war and why he was asking to fight and his relatives, all these perplexities were there. But those perplexities began to be cleared up when he accepted that, no, there's different levels here. You're on a level that I accept that you can instruct me, and I'm on a level that I'll follow your instructions. I'll hear from you, and I'll do what you say. Bhagavad Gita 2:7 is where that begins. He says that now the relation changes. By your mercy, by the blessings of the internal potency, I have a exchange with you, a loving exchange with you as a friend, but now I have a different need. And I need other mercy. Therefore, shishyasteham sampadimam sampadimam. He takes the role of a disciple and hears. So there are 9 points that I want to make which explain the difference about between us and Krishna as explained in Bhagavad Gita. Because we shouldn't dwell under the misconception that some or other were the same as Krishna. We should clearly understand there's a difference. So there's 9 things that I want to present to you this morning quickly about why Krishna is God and how he's different from us and superior to us. First, God is described in the Shastras. To know God, you must accept the Shastras. So, the Shastra. Prabhupada, when discussing with people in his preaching around the world, he would discuss on the basis of Shastra. And that if you want to understand God, you have to follow what the scripture says. And particularly, when he talked to Christians, what did he say? Thou shalt not kill. Yeah, thou shalt not kill. I mean, he went to Shastra. Okay, let's go to Shastra and have a discussion on the basis of that. In the Bible it says, thou shalt not kill, then why are you killing? Because we have to know God through Shastra, scripture. That's how he's known. And the quality of the scripture is that it's universal. Prabhupada could have said to us also, thou shalt not kill. Same instruction may be coming in the Vedic context, but the instruction's universal. The religious principle is the same. Shastra has eternal principles. The Vedas are eternal. It's not that they're created at some time for some particular purpose, but they're eternal. They're always existing, and they're always giving relevant knowledge. That's the quality of a Shastra. And so if you want to know God, you have to know him through Shastra. You must accept Shastra. Because that's what the purpose of the Shastra is, to describe who is God, how he's God, how we're not God. Number two, in the beginning of the purport here, it talks about Ashraya, means the resting place or shelter. Lord Krishna's question is, what is our actual resting place or shelter? It means, what is the ultimate nature? What is our ultimate nature or constitutional position? So, in the Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita, we also find a description about shelter or resting place that describes the constitutional position of God in the living entities. Can anybody think of a verse? that describes how the living entity is resting on Krishna. Yes. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So this idea about a resting place, which comes up immediately in the conversation of Lord Hamsa. What is the resting place of all living beings? It's on Krishna. It's explained in Bhagavad Gita. So that's a difference between us and God. We're resting. He's giving the resting place. We're resting. We're dependent upon Him. So that's a difference between ourselves and God. God is the origin. Another verse in Bhagavad Gita which describes that God is the origin of everything. We're not the origin of everything. Shastra doesn't say that. We don't have that experience ourselves either as being the origin of everything. Except all the problems we create for ourselves. We're not even the origin of that. So, what's a verse from Bhagavad Gita that describes God as the origin of everything? Yes, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Why do we worship? Because we understand God is the origin of everything. Number four, other beings superior to us in duration of life, strength, intelligence, and other material abilities accept Krishna as God. Verse from Bhagavad Gita, neither the hosts of the demigods nor the great sages know my origin, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and the sages. So the demigods and sages, they're superior to us. I mean, they're more intelligent than us. They have a longer duration of life than us. They're stronger than us. Even materially, we can understand that they're at a their lives are at a different level than ours. And they can't understand other than as explained by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. So if they accept, then you can also accept. Okay, this is sort of an opposite one, number five. Fools reject an obviously superior person. So we can understand from hearing about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita that he's a superior person to us. So what kind of person doesn't take that advice? Muda, exactly. So what is the verse? Right. Fools deride me when I descend in human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Again, this is God. They don't know that. So, number six. Knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of God, makes a perceptible difference in one's life. It's not that it's just all theoretical or faith or something. When we worship Krishna, we get a tangible difference, a perceivable difference in our lives. That's pretty good. I have here, whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of God without doubting is to be understood as a knower of everything, and he therefore engages himself in full devotional service with Son of Bharata. So what is the verse you were saying? Because that's also applicable. It's not just one answer here. You know. So what were you saying? Okay. Right. So we get practical knowledge, and it makes a difference in how we perceive the world when we accept Krishna as superior to us. There's also Bhavanam Jananam Ante Gyanavamam Pajyante Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So that's also there. Number seven, one can perceive his dependence upon Krishna. God appears in our lives, again, in perceptible ways, and it shows more than anything else that we're dependent upon Krishna. So there is a verse, I believe. Yes. Yes. Also, Sarvasya Chaham Hari Sanivisto Matatmutya Gyanam Pohanamcha. We can understand that Krishna is giving us intelligence. Krishna is causing us to remember something. Krishna is causing us to forget something. All these things are how Krishna interacts with us in our lives. And they're characterized by our being dependent upon him. So that's number seven. Number eight, Krishna himself describes his superiority. Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in Vedas as that supreme person. And finally, number 10, all the learned sages and sadhus, acharyas, accept Krishna as superior to all others. So, all the great acharyas of the past, like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Balabhacharya, the Alwars of South India, Raghavinda Swami, Nimbarkacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Yamunacharya, Sridhar Swami, have accepted the fact that Krishna is indeed the Supreme Lord. As the old Christian gospel goes, if it was good enough for the acharyas, it's good enough for me. So all these reasons are why Krishna is God and we're dependent upon him and that we should serve him. So that's, anyway, any comments, additions, questions, reflections, anybody else? Yes, Prabhu. Oh, when I prepare for class, I look for things, and I found this, you know, these points in an outline somewhere, and then worked with them in terms of what the theme of the class was and the points that I wanted to make. And so, is it mine? Am I a plagiarist?
I used to use a shorter version similar to that, but the way I would do it, I'd say the Shastra says he's God, the great sages says he's God, he says he's God, he demonstrated he's God. Like that really, and something more. There was one more that says he's God, and yeah, so these are good.
Yeah, support. They're good. Makes it easily digestible for devotees and non-devotees as well. Yeah. Well, let's see if there's anybody else before we go back to Vishnubhav. Here, Vishnubhav.
It seems like the logic here is that the logic that's being used is that if you inquire from someone, automatically that person is greater than you. And you're taking a kind of inferior position to that personality. But in the Nectar of Instruction, it's also recommended that that between devotees, we inquire confidentially and reveal our mind confidentially. And is that always to be done with someone that's superior, or can that be done with peers also?
Oh, you point out a very good point is that we need a combination of things. We need to approach a superior for knowledge, but we need to be able to discuss that and deal with it intimately in a friendly relationship. And we also have to be merciful to those that are dependent upon us. So all Nectar Devotion Nectar of Instruction recommends that all three of those kind of relationships have to be there, and they will be there in our lives. Which is there a prominent one? I think, well, a prominent one, it makes me immediately, my mind immediately goes, well, Prabhupada has kind of come as a superior and gave us the shelter where we have that superior, inferior relationship. But in the complete shelter he's given us, he's also given us the association of devotees where we have friendships on a, with an equal kind of exchange, and that we have those that are dependent upon us, that we help culture their spiritual life. So all are necessary for the complete. So that's a good addition. Thank you for that part. Okay.
Well, the story of the village man that you gave, and he traced his way up to everybody. Finally, he came to understand that the deity of Krishna was the supreme. But in Krishna consciousness, a devotee who's intelligent, he doesn't directly worship Krishna. He worships Krishna's representative and serves Krishna's representative, the pure devotee.
Yeah. I got no argument with that. Just my own inability to do it nicely. Any questions from the ladies? No, call you honey for.
I believe that revelation of the mind is implicit in all levels of close relationships, juniors, peers, and seniors.
Mm.
Because otherwise, like in Kali Yuga, we advance by being together. The strength of Kali Yuga is in Sangha, community. It's a Sankirtan movement. We glorify together. If there's not revelation of the mind, we're not together.
Mm. Right. Very good point. This discord, society of the devotees, is our salvation. So, any other last points before we end? Pantarashima Bhagavatam.